are our specialty drugs? Has price pressure in the US bottomed out? Are Indian companies innovating fast enough? What are biosimilars? Are we really over US FDA issues? Will pharma stocks ever show supernormal returns? These are some of the questions the Meds in Box podcast on CNBCTV18.com aims to answer. Hi, I'm Ekta Batra. Do tune in while I chat with the top voices in the pharma and healthcare space to get answers to the most challenging questions, spot the key trends, and identify the next leg of growth in the pharma and healthcare space. Only on CNBC TV 18.
Our guest on today's podcast is Ravi Dharmshi, CIO of ValueQuest Investment Advisors. Ravi currently manages around 500 crores, which is sector agnostic, but Ravi has a long history with pharmaceuticals. He began investing in pharma and healthcare stocks back in 2002 and has worked previously with rare enterprises. Some of Ravi's key bets in pharma have included Lupin, Glenmark, Natco, and Divi's. Ravi, hi, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ekta. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, Ravi, you know, let's start with the fact that you have enormous experience in the pharmaceutical space. All the way back since 2002, you've been investing in this entire space. Give us an idea on how the landscape has changed.
You know, the landscape has truly evolved. The first time when I looked at this sector, say this was around 2002, the companies used to be small, the opportunity size used to be large, and the competition used to be far lesser. Today, the roles have reversed. The companies have become far larger. The opportunity has shrunk a little bit, and the competition has increased dramatically, which is exactly why last couple of years, the pharma space has seen a derating of sorts. It is actually that the seeds of the derating were sown in the success of the pharma sector itself, where we milked the opportunity to the fullest for the past 1.5 decades. And I think today now we are in a transition phase. Going forward, I think we'll have to make the leap to the other end. After having milked the oral solids opportunity, we'll have to move and find greener pastures elsewhere.
Hmm. Ravi, according to you, in the past 15 years for the pharmaceutical industry, what has been the key challenge which has actually emerged, which has possibly resulted in a lot of these stocks and companies topping out?
Yeah, so I think it was a perfect storm that hit the pharma sector, and that too when the valuations were actually at its peak. So what happened is in around 2012, the peak generic opportunity peaked at in around 2012. After that, the number of drugs going off patent has reduced. Combined with the fact that a lot of the profits that these companies were making were coming from one-off opportunities, and markets had assigned a P multiple to that. And then entered 2015, and some of the things that action that FDA had taken, whether it is GDUFA 1, which led to a tremendous increase in the number of approvals, combined with the consolidation in the buyer of the buyers, the channel consolidation in US, and the increased focus and political rhetoric on reducing the drug pricing in US. All of this combined, and some more action from regulators, FDA, on the warning letters and 483s, which compounded the problems for the sector, and that's why we have seen such a wealth destruction over the last 2-3 years.
Hmm. So Ravi, is the generic opportunity then over in the US markets for pharmaceutical companies? We've seen, the US FDA consecutively approve record number of drugs for the past 2-3 years. So is it saturated there now?
So one portion of the market, which is the generic oral solids, has definitely been saturated. I think the generic penetration over there has reached more than 80%. That part of the market has definitely saturated, if I may say. And going forward, there are profit pools available for the Indian companies to take advantage of. But these are more difficult opportunities, require upfront investment, and there is a lot of time involved in tapping this opportunity. So we will have to upgrade ourselves and find better opportunities to take advantage of the US market. Finally, US market is still about $400-500 billion in size. So, and our entire Indian market cap is about $9-9.5 billion. So no way can we say that we have tapped out the entire opportunity. But I think there is a transition phase involved for us to move from generic oral solids to more complex biosimilars or specialty pharma opportunities.
One of the examples which stand out in terms of your investments or what encouraged you to invest is actually investing in Cipla in the 80s, I think, and then not holding on to those investments. Tell us a little more about that, Ravi. And also, do you think that you would invest into Cipla now?
So, you know what? This is just a fantastic eye-opener that we have in our... I can see my dad had bought about, in mid-80s, a couple of lakh worth of Cipla. Honestly, we had no idea about pharmaceuticals or any such thing. But if I just do a back of the envelope calculation as to if I had held on to those shares till today, I mean, they would be worth more than 500 crores, just one particular investment. And that just opens your eyes to the kind of wealth creation that can happen in this sector and in stock equities in general. So Cipla today is a different ballgame altogether. I mean, the way it has evolved is very, very different from the other players. So, I mean, I would not comment on Cipla per se, but there are many opportunities available in pharma sector, and we have definitely not seen the last of the pharma sector. I keep repeating, maybe a year or two of more transition phase involved, and then we'll see another wealth creation round in the pharma sector as well.
A lot of the companies have already created wealth. I'm assuming that when you talk about upgrade and transition, it would be probably into innovation and R&D. A select few have managed to do that, and the one which comes to mind most prominently is Biocon. So for a company such as Biocon, which has already given a lot in terms of returns to investors in the past 1 or 2 years, has that story already topped out because R&D is already baked in?
So Biocon, all the profits that they made from statins in the early 2000s, they invested all that money into going after biosimilar opportunity, and they were ahead of the game, and they were solely focused on the biosimilar opportunity, which is why this tremendous wealth creation has happened. Having said that, surely going forward, execution and actually capturing this opportunity will still remain a challenge, because we are not very sure how the dynamics of the biosimilar opportunity will pan out. How easy or difficult is it to grab market share? How the regulations will evolve? Well, actually, compared to 5 years back, the regulations have turned out to be in the favor of the generics, and the political will is also to get the prices of the biologics lower. So that way, the tailwind is there. But having said that, I think there are about $50 billion worth of biologics going off patent in the next 5 to 7 years. Assuming that translates into a biosimilar opportunity of somewhere close to $7-8 billion, we have to see what kind of opportunity Biocon manages to grab from that. If they manage to grab a 10% kind of a market share, that would be fantastic. Could be $700-800 million worth of sales, and the profits over here will be tremendous. Of course, at this point of time, market recognizes this fact, and that is why the stock is quoting in close to 40,000 crores kind of a market cap. So I think from this point on, it is more a neutral view. I think large part of the valuations are reflecting a large part of the opportunity being captured. It remains to be seen whether they actually manage to capture that kind of opportunity or no.
Which are the other companies where your investments have done well, Ravi?
Just a disclaimer at this point of time. We may discuss about some stocks, and they have created wealth for us in the past, and going forward, we might change our view on it, and this discussion is purely from an academic point of view. But some of the, in the past, we have had some good winners in Matrix, Lupin Labs, and in some recent times, we have had very good wealth creation from Natco Pharma or Aurobindo Pharma. And just a disclosure that we continue to own the last two names even at this point of time.
Okay. For a company such as Lupin, you know, and maybe even a company such as Ipca Labs that we've seen this year, many of them are in this transition phase of trying to solve their US FTA issues. And Ipca, it seems as though the investors or the street is factoring it in on a positive side. But how do you choose within companies which have long pending US FTA issues or are in this transition phase which have this regulatory overhang? Your bet can go either way for any of them.
Yeah, so I'll tell you from my experience in Aurobindo. I think Aurobindo was one of the first one to run into this regulatory headwind way back in 2011-12, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it took them nearly 18 to 24 months to get out of that, which is now in hindsight, you can say that was one of the fastest. I think Divi's is the only one besides Aurobindo who has managed to get out of US FTA trouble in a shorter period than that. So if a company, my take is that you have to figure out where in the regulatory cycle are the companies and how serious are the concerns. Are FDA's concerns more with, you know, the procedural thing, or is it a data integrity issue? If it is data integrity issue, then FDA doesn't take it very kindly. And promoters' involvement is very, very important in those companies. What we have seen is wherever the promoters' involvement reduced, they stopped going to the shop floor and they were kind of detached from the whole operations, is where these lapses have happened the most. So it is very important that the culture is driven top down from the from the top. It is driven all the way down to the bottom. It is it is not that US FDA is concerned with a particular instance at a particular plant. It is more that they want the Indian companies to change their culture of cutting corners. Now, India has achieved tremendous success in US. I mean, every fourth pill sold in US is manufactured in India. So that tells you a lot. And if we are going to be that big a force in the US generic market, then we might as well, the US FDA, it is but obvious that US FDA will ensure that we upgrade ourselves. So there are a lot of companies that have managed to upgrade themselves, but wherever the issues were more to do with the culture of the company rather than the procedural thing, I think it is over there I would still remain skeptical and not give a benefit of doubt. So there is, without naming anyone, there are companies where if the issues are at more than 2-3 plants, then you can have a little bit more skeptical view of their ability to get out of the regulatory wrangle. You have to judge whether they will be able to get out of the regulatory issues and how long they will take and what is the market factoring in. And combined with the fact that how much of the future pipeline will be damaged because of the regulatory issues. If they manage to come out unscathed and they still have a good pipeline ahead of them, then I think those are really fertile ground for you to be that's where the ideas will emerge out of. I mean, because it so happens that market factors in the worst.
Okay, that point is taken. So basically, a company which has system-wide issues when it comes to the US FDA would be something which you need to tread with caution. But Ravi, if we were to have this conversation about pharmaceutical industry, say 3 years down the line, a medium-term view, where would we be and which are the companies that you think would be probably most fit to succeed?
So, as I mentioned earlier, when I started tracking this sector, these companies used to be small and now they have become quite large. So there is a far more nuanced view that one needs to take while investing in the pharma sector now. There are certain companies that are adopting the last man standing approach, where they are, their strategy is not to be the first one in the Para 4 queue and try to make that supernormal profit for a short period of time. There are some companies who are following, most of the companies are actually following that strategy. There are some who are not following that. There are some who are actually following very, very limited opportunities. They are going after only the complex ones and trying to make the best of their R&D dollar. And there are some who are diversifying geographically into other emerging markets, other developed markets. And probably there is a, you know, after US, the two big pharma markets are Japan and China. So probably China is an opportunity that can come up in future, and Japan. So geographic diversification, upgradation in terms of the type of product launches, are the strategy that most of the companies are adopting going forward. So I would say you have to have a more nuanced view. It will not be, every company cannot be painted with the same kind of brush as to who will succeed and who will not succeed. How they manage to make the most of their R&D dollar is what you know, you have to constantly judge them by. And a high R&D number does not necessarily mean a good thing. What you need is those, that R&D to deliver on products where they can differentiate themselves from the market. The ability to create those niche opportunities, a protected pool of profit where nobody else can come in for an extended period of time, is what is going to make companies stand apart.
Okay. All right, Ravi. On that note, we're going to wrap up this conversation. But thank you very much for joining in. And we're going to touch base with you on the Medicine Box at a future date as well to discuss more issues within the pharmaceutical and healthcare space in depth. Thanks very much.